Over the glasses.
Have you guys heard these little playback machines, cassette playback called, I can't ever think of the name.
Walkman by Sony.
Yeah, we did. We saw.
I saw one in the music store.
And we're good.
Put one on.
Did you try?
You just can't believe it, can you?
Ain't that something?
Oh, isn't that amazing to get that small
the sound they get.
I know, and they're teeny.
Gosh, we got to get. We was talking about it, Bob.
Merle gave all the regular guys in the band, just, you know, the three or four, gave them those for Christmas.
Really?
Boy, man, they are nice. Look like Dean had bought you one time.
Yeah, it does.
I can't understand.
I don't either.
What the deal is?
Well. You want me to tell him why I bought him?
Well, I'll start by asking Tiny about that tune we were listening to, San Antonio Moonlight. It's a tune that you wrote.
The composer,
at least said that on the 78.
Right, you're right.
And that was with the Jubileers.
That, of course, was trying to get the same kind of thing as a San Antonio Rose, which is popular then, just in the instrumental form, but just trying to make something up. And I guess that's probably the first song I ever tried to write.
When was that recorded?
About 38 or 9, like 1939.
And who else was in the band?
Steel player was a fellow by the name of Pivito, Ace Pivito, from Port Arthur, Texas, who's no longer alive. Jimmy Hart was a piano player, and I don't know what's happened to him. I can't think of the rhythm guitar player's name. Earl Carruthers was another fiddle player on that same group. I don't know if he's still around or not. And a fellow by the name of Toby Kelly. Now he was a rhythm guitar player. Now who played bass? Gee, I just don't remember.
How did you start playing with them?
After I had been with a band in Louisiana, a Cajun band for a year, and came back to Port Arthur, Texas, I started playing with them, and it ended up that some of the guys left, and it was my band then for a while. And that's when we got the recording contract with Bluebird.
Were those your first recordings?
Yes, those were the first ones I ever made.
You were playing in a Cajun band. I never knew that.
Yeah, a fellow by the name of Happy Fats and his Rainbow Ramblers.
Really?
Rain, Louisiana.
Did you record with them?
No, I never did record with them.
Because they did a bunch of recordings.
Yeah, right. I don't think I did.
And you played mandolin?
And fiddle.
Uh-huh.
Right. Uh-huh. For about a year I was over there.
Uh-huh. And what kind of mandolin was it you were playing on there? Is that electric?
That's an electric. That one was a Gibson, the same one that I used with the Bob Wills Band.
Uh-huh.
A Gibson A model electric. It was made for electric. It was not converted.
Uh-huh. It has a really different tone than the Bob Wills.
8 strings.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I was playing 8 strings then. This was before World War II and before the shortage of strings. So at the first I used an 8 string mandolin.
So you used the same mandolin for the Wills recordings, but the difference was that
the single and double string. Right.
Really?
Right. That's the big difference.
That's really interesting. Right. It's a very different sound.
By the way, I've got to tell you now, this is March, right, of 1981. Okay, about 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were in Houston, Texas, and Eldon and I are roommates on the road with Haggard, and we got to talking about the first electric mandolin player that I ever heard that more or less inspired me to play, a guy by the name of Leo Rayleigh. I think I've brought his name up to you before. We looked in the, and Eldon had worked with Leo back before I knew him. We looked in the phone book, and there's a Leo Rayleigh there. We called him up, and it was him. The same guy, so we talked for quite a while on the phone. His health is not too good. He didn't come out to see us, but we talked for a long time about the early days and what have you.
Wow, that's really nice. Is he still playing?
What did he say? He's playing a little.
Playing a little, very little. His health is not, I don't know what they said, his health.
Some kind of nerve problem, condition. His wife said. Yeah.
But he's, well, you know, he's the guy that made that, It Makes No Difference Now.
Right.
The original record, wasn't it?
Right, he's the one. In fact, that's the very tune that got me interested in electric mandolin.
Okay.
Okay.
Really?
Right.
You heard that and said, mm-hmm. That's what I want to.
Yeah, that's what I want to be when I grow up.
And so Jimmy Hart and the Merrymakers, was that just another name?
That was about the same group, right. Same group. Same group of people.
Now you recorded Let's Start All Over Again with them that you had wrote. And are you singing on that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You doing the vocal.
Right.
It
right.
sounded like you.
Yeah, and there's another one on one of those called, oh gee whiz, that Lou Wayne wrote. I can't tell you the name of it. I can't tell you. But it's on one of those 078s.
Uh huh. And you're singing on that too?
Yeah.
You were mm-hmm. the vocalist in the band.
Right.
Under.
Right.
And what area did you play around?
Southeast Texas, Port Arthur, Beaumont. And in that general area, in Louisiana,
uh-huh.
Eastern Louisiana,
Western Louisiana. Did you know a lot of the other musicians who were playing in that area?
Quite a few. Moon Mulligan was popular in that area.
Right.
Cliff Bruner. When you got over to Houston, then there was a bunch of them. Ted Daffin and the Texans, Floyd Tillman and all of his group. Dickie McBride, what was their group called? I can't remember, but I knew most of the musicians there. Yeah.
How did that music scene start there? It seemed like that was a sort of central area for a certain type of Western swing.
That I can't answer. Of course, I guess Cliff Bruner must have moved down to that part of Texas from after he left the Musical Brownies, Milton Brown. After I don't know if he was still working with Milton when he got killed or not, but he was. From that band,
uh-huh.
And he—I think he probably maybe spearheaded it in that part of Texas.
Was Bob Dunn was it from that area too?
Bob Dunn moved down there after the Milton Brown area, right?
Yeah. Now you've talked about him a lot, and one of the tunes on your new album is kind of dedicated to
right.
His
he,
style of playing.
The style of steel guitar that he played, really, I really liked it. He made a steel guitar sound more like a saxophone than a steel guitar. He was the first, as far as I'm concerned, the first really swinging steel guitar player I'd ever heard.
Whatever happened to him?
He died in Houston several years ago, because we asked Leo about it, Leo Raley, when we were there a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh. What were you doing around this time, Eldon?
I don't think, was I here then? I mean, was I back when Tiny was that young? I don't know where I was. No.
You was already an old man at that time.
No, I guess, let's see, I would have been 19, I was with the Bob Wills band in those days.
Uh-huh.
37, 38, 39, 40, in that area.
When did you join them?
37.
37.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you end up joining them?
Well, I was working a radio staff, you know, that was the good work back in those days. I was working a CBS station in Tulsa. We were swinging the classics, of all things, and Bob Wills heard me playing guitar and give me a call. We wasn't playing any Western swing. We wasn't playing nothing but just classics is what we were playing, and swing tempo. So kind of, I don't know, I guess Bob thought maybe I was good. I don't know. Anyway, he called me up, and that's the first time he ever heard me.
Were you playing electric guitar by then, or did you start?
No, I wasn't playing electric. I didn't have an electric then.
When did you start playing?
When I started with Bob. He had an amplifier. I'd never really saw one before. I don't know where he came up with this amplifier, and we had to have a little crystal mic that I had to cut the bridge out and put a little crystal mic under the bridge so you could use the amplifier.
Huh.
We used to, you know, used to have PA sets, and you'd have to hold your instruments up in the PA set if you was playing dances to play.
Right.
And gouge them real hard, play as loud as you could.
There's this one tune that you do a single string solo on that I just recently listened to. It was Whoa Babe, a tune that Leon McAuliffe sings a vocal on. Do you remember that?
I guess, yes, I do. That was probably one of the first tunes I recorded with Bob.
Really?
Mm-hmm. One of the first sessions. I believe that. I think we done most of the recordings in Dallas. So that would have been one of the first recording sessions I done with Bob. I don't remember what else we done on that session.
It was November 1938 is what I have.
Oh, that would
probably what time
have
of the
been. Yeah. I don't know, but I got a book that probably said it. You know?
No, I would probably see. I joined Bob in November of 1937, so I would probably say that was the first session. I've kind of lost track. But,
did you play electric on that? Do you remember the sound? It sounded to me not like an amplified.
I don't know.
Guitar.
Probably wasn't. I would say no. I don't think I used electric. I think the first recording session that I played electric on would have been when we done Twin Guitar Special 1940 would have been the first time I used electric on recordings.
Uh-huh.
So it would have been a regular standard guitar.
How did that develop, playing electric guitar? Where did you first see them? Or is it just by putting
electric guitar? Well, by case of necessity. See, with the Wheels band playing dance music, you was nearly, boy, when you could find any kind of an amplifier, you just nearly had to have it. So I guess, and then you got used to playing them, and then you couldn't play the other. I mean, it's a different touch.
Right.
So if you get used to playing electric, then it's very difficult for me to play an acoustic guitar anymore because I just don't, well, it's impossible practically.
Uh-huh.
Because you get used to that touch of that electric, and it's just a different ball game.
Now, were you mostly playing just rhythm guitar, or were you playing single string lead?
Rhythm, single string what you had to play, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you played just enough to keep the job. That was the primary enters back in those days.
How did you develop your style? Where did you pick up the ideas? Who did you listen to? I
listened to everybody there was to listen to. Of course, there wasn't too many back in those days. Probably Reinhardt. About that time, I heard the first recording of his, 38 probably. And what's the guy's name? With Goodman, the colored guy. I used to hear him live, but that would have been 39.
Uh-huh.
So I really can't, I don't know as I was listening to anybody because there wasn't anybody to listen to.
So were you picking up your ideas from more
players? Well, actually, I guess that's what you would say, just whatever you heard,
uh-huh.
Or just your own ideas mainly, I guess.
But don't let him kid you, he was copying fiddle players.
did you?
No, I was suffering with them.
Did you ever play jazz? I mean, country music, it seems like most of what you've been playing and have come out of has been jazz, or...
I never listened to country music when I was a young man. I listened to hotel bands all my life. I mean, when I was a youngster, before I even started playing. Finally got me a radio, but I never listened to string music. I always listened to big bands. That's always been my choice of listening.
Is jazz the right word for that? Is that what
I don't,
you called it back then? What,
well, I guess you would possibly...
Swing
would be the word. And that's why Western swing, that's why I always love Western swing. Because it's I call it a form of jazz, so to speak. You know, New Orleans jazz or whatever you want to call it.
Was back then, was swing like the popular music of the day? Was it kind of like rock and roll is now? Could you say that?
Yeah. Big bands, namely, like Benny Goodman, Tommy Dorsey, and those bands back in those days were the big things, you know. So that's what you listen to, you know.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, a lot of the next generation older now, they didn't like all this business of people taking solos and swing-type solos, just like a lot of us don't like the rock and roll today. They thought, well, gee, don't he know the tune? He can't even play the tune, you know. So it was a new thing then, when the big bands would take their solos.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was one of the strange things about Bob Wills. He was an innovator, I call him, because now if he'd give you a course, he wanted you to do everything but the lead.
Right.
He didn't want you to play the lead. So this tells you something about him back in those early days. He was, I'd say, ahead of his time, you know. Because his ideas, that was one of his ideas, and most people renege on that every time. They want you to play the lead, but not Wills. He wanted you to play everything but the lead.
Uh-huh.
So that, I guess that's one of the reasons, I guess, why so many people, I guess, that work with Bob or listen to Bob, that's why they developed that particular thing, because That's what he wanted rather than the lead.
Uh-huh. Well, Tiny, you don't really play anything but the lead. You've never really played chords that much, did you?
No, but now, wait a minute now. You're thinking of lead in a different light, Tom. When Eldon is talking about lead in that connotation, it's playing a straight melody as opposed to improvising.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is just a little different way of using the word lead. A lead guitarist can play the melody on the first course and then play jazz or whatever he wants on the second or the third or the fourth or whatever.
Right.
But the way Eldon was talking about it, I'm sure, is playing the straight melody. In other words, da 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 da. If it makes no difference now, or San Antonio Road, just a pure melody. Well, Bob didn't want you to do that. He wanted you to improvise.
Yeah, he wanted you to play
like you wanted to,
like you felt.
Right.
And I guess he was one of the first or the band that popularized that kind of Western swing.
He and Milton Brown had to have been, didn't he?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I think so.
Now, how about the Alabama Boys? Did you do that? You did that quite a bit.
Well, yeah, we done it with the... See, I was with... Before I joined Bob, I came to Tulsa with a band called the Alabama Boys. Now, this was a good band. Practically all the guys that was on the Alabama Boys later joined the Wills band, like Mansell and Lewis Tierney and Darryl Jones, bass man, and Cotton Thompson, the guy that wrote Milk Cow Blues, and... Well, I think every one of them that was on that, Ray DeGear, fine sax player. So every one of them that was on the Alabama Boys back in 35 and 36 later did join the Wheels band. And the band, the Alabama Boys, was doing very good. Of course, back in those days, this band was what they called a Commonwealth band. A lot of the bands were Commonwealth back then. You know, you took expenses off at the top and everybody got a fair share. And I think I was probably the first salary man that went to work with the Alabama Boys. And then Bob was a Commonwealth band up until, I would probably say, 35. That's when he started advertising Playboy. That's when he made a deal with General Mills. And General Mills, he couldn't sign a contract with General Mills having a Commonwealth band, so that's when he had to change his band to being privately owned.
So it was just the whole band split whatever the problem
was. Yeah, right. That's the way they work, right.
The early bands, right.
Yeah.
Jeez. It'd be nice if they did that today, right?
Well, I don't know.